everyone, and welcome to episode 25 of Fans of Power. I'm Joe Amato, and I am here with my partner in crime, Tyler Baker. How's it going, T-Rex?
What it is, my man.
Nothing much. We're going to be hitting a lot of different things today, and I was going to say Brian is not with us this week. He had a prior engagement, but he said, don't you worry, he'll be back, and he'll be here next week and for all the other episodes. So that's just to let you guys know what's going on there. But today we were I made a post on Facebook a couple times about some things, and Tyler had a great suggestion, and figured we'd talk about some of the best one-shot characters from Masters of the Universe, Princess of Power, and this can be from the, you know, cartoons to the mini comics. So there's a lot of them, a lot of people like. But Tyler, why don't you start off with maybe one that really hits you first that you know or you like?
This is like asking me to. There's too many cliche analogies of trying to.
There's too many good ones, huh?
There really is, but I'm probably just gonna have to start, you know, with what is always going to be probably my top one is going to be Chakotay. Simply because of just how frightening she was to me as a kid, and it was just like I always look back at the times of when I would rent those VHS tapes at the store. It was like when Pee-wee Herman and Pee-wee's Big Adventure is going to save all the animals, and he keeps looking at the snakes and keeps going, coming back and like, oh, I'll get those later. Uh-huh. That was me with House of Chakotay, and I just have – I like it as I got older. It was just like, this is an incredibly awesome character. I mean, just because of how frightening her design is with like the vampire-like teeth and the solid black eyes. And to be somebody that was just as frightening, really,
especially with that, like being like a two-parter, you know, like how it started off with basically like Lord Mast.
Yeah,
right?
And that makes it even more special because he would be number two for me because he was also frightening with the very kind of mechanical sounding voice that Alan Oppenheimer did. But it was just it was about as frightening as Linda Gary as Chakotay because of the look and the voice really helped sell those characters too. Plus, what was going on with him too. And to have something that I can still watch and think of just how frightening this was as a kid and just think, oh, this is so good. Not too many cartoons I can say really frightened me from watching, you know, Turtles, the Thundercats, Silverhawks, Brave Star, you know, the list goes on and on of great cartoons, but nothing really ever scared me as much as that two-part episode of House of Chakotay.
And it was like you said, it was memorable, not only the character, but I mean the being a two-parter itself, but it was frightening, like, you know, coming towards the end when, you know, like you heard this laugh, you know, from through the door or something. Didn't it like end with her and a laugh and then the lighting?
Well, no, it ends with them kind of like fading into what's inside the pyramid, which is the door, and she has her like a sculpt of her face is on the door, and you hear this voice say "to be continued," and then it just kind of fades out.
Okay, see, and it's been so long, you know, since I guess I caught the end of that, because I for some reason thought I remembered a spooky laugh of hers, but
oh no, I mean she does that, you know, but like when they open up the pyramid, like when Ram Man, you know, bashes into it, and the door kind of, or the outer shell of the pyramid breaks, and you see the entrance. You know, you hear her laughing from the inside.
Ah, that was like, part.
Yeah. Oh, dear God.
Yeah, because it is. You're right. It's not rare. I mean, it's rare that you'd have characters that could frighten you from that cartoon. And, like, you know, she did. She had that characteristic to where she was a spooky character. And it was like a memorable, you know, one-off character or one-shot. Not saying that there's a lot that weren't, because as we're going to talk about, there was a lot there are. But definitely hers is memorable beyond the two-parter. But I think for some reason some of those spooky characters seem like they do stick out more to me. Like you talk about Chakotay, and the one that always stuck out to me starts off almost the same way, but Shigora. and that big sucker. Now what's weird is some people could look at it when they'd see that cartoon almost think, oh, you know, he looks like just, you know, a big fat octopus guy or guy with big tentacles and maybe like a joke, but that's the one that frightened me the most. I mean, not only because how his design was, but to see this character that's so powerful that the good guys and bad guys had to band together to try to stop him. I mean, the sorceress is blasting him, you know, with some of her full power of energy, and he's laughing at her. I remember when I watched it as a kid, I was like, this is freaking me out. What can stop this son of a gun? I mean, like, when you've seen him, did he frighten you too? Was it some character that really stuck out? Because for me, Shigoro just freaked me out.
He didn't frighten me. I thought his design was more than fine. It was more about the fact of like how high the odds are stacked in this episode. You know that, the episode opens with Whiplash. You know, is like, you know, just crawling into the palace asking for help because Snake Mountain's been taken over by Shigoro.
And how weird was that to see? Like you say, Whiplash coming in to the palace and they're all prepared for a fight and he just collapses, and then they actually have him like in what? They're kind of like version of the attorney in hospital or something?
Yeah, it's like an observing room, or like, not an observing room, but where you would take a
recovery.
As King Randall says, sent for the court physician, I think that's what he says. So that's... Definitely has a surgery table in case they have to remove hernias from He-Man or something like that from trying to push too many heavy things or something like that. Yeah. But it just really helped build up the idea that it's a big thing. They have to go save Skeletor, and then they have to get him to, you know, just like, look, we can't. I just love how He-Man's like, we're not giving you a choice. If you brought this thing, you're going to help us, you know, to get rid of it too. So it was. It really shows that, you know, like, look, this is something serious. We don't have time to debate and argue over this. We gotta, you know, band together and stop this guy. And then, you know, for him to, you know, leaves them fighting his little kind of flying, you know, bat mouths, whatever you want to call them there. Mm-hmm. And then just goes off and breaks right into Castle Grayskull. Like, he just tears the jawbridge open, closes it right back up, and plops himself right on the throne.
Because you didn't, listen, I mean, and that's something you never really seen in that show, was a being so powerful that he got into Grayskull. You know, unlike, you know, Skeletor is, he's trying
hard. He's done it several times, but, sure. I mean, like, first time, like, you know, he's just like, I've been observing this planet for a long time. I'm ready to take it over. Here I am. Because of, black magic and evil sorcery and stuff like that, which was good to get kind of see Skeletor get back to, you know, using incantations with like this kind of like black magic symbol on the ground. And
That's what's different, I guess, what you're saying there is like with Skeletor, he's trying to use spells and things and items and whatever and help from other people to kind of like get into there. But then we see this being like Shigoro that he needs no help. You know, it's just him, and he just gets right in there. That's, I guess, maybe that's what seems like it stood out as him being so powerful and frightening to me as a kid of what he could do.
Yeah,
by
because
himself.
Yeah, for someone that we have never seen before comes in, you know, does what he does, and because we don't get to see the heroes and villains team up a whole lot, but it really had to be a legitimate one-shot villain of some sort that, like, you have to team up to stop this. And it was cool to not just see just like He-Man and Skeletor team up. You had the Heroic Warriors and the Evil Warriors teaming up. And I love that shot where He-Man, you know, goes after Shigoro, and then you've got, you know, Trapjaw and Fisto come running in, and they're all grabbing at different parts of Shigoro, like all just trying to like just pull and just wrestle with him essentially. It was just, and then he just smacks them both all the way. You know, he
like nothing.
It's just so cool to see them, you know, using physical strength to stop this guy, and he just smacks him away, and it's enough can't be said about that episode and that particular character because what he brings.
I would like to see him. I mean, wouldn't you like to see him? I mean, there's a lot of characters I'd love to see return, and you know, again, it's always me and my trying to be optimistic and wishful thinking, but if a cartoon ever returned or something, that's one character I would love to see some kind of overhaul maybe done to him if he would come back with Shigoro, because, you know, you have to make him obviously look a little more evil. I mean, he already had the power that was, like, to me, unmatched, but his look and design was something that was kind of questionable by some people to why maybe fans didn't take him so seriously. But, I mean,
well, Axel drew him in one of the mini comics, like a little cameo, and I'm sure, you know, something, you know, it's, you know, the really, that's what's good about these characters that is that if you keep the essential design and kind of mature it a little bit, you know, you can make all these characters that people just kind of look like, and I guess unless you watched it as a kid, you really didn't know any better. But as an adult and going back and watching certain episodes for the first time and thinking like, oh, this just doesn't work so well. Like, you're cool with all the initial designs of He-Man, Skeletor, and everybody else, but when you have a creature of some kind or a one-shot villain that shows up and you're thinking, I just don't think this really fits. But if you saw it as a kid, most of the time you kind of bought it a lot. But, you know, I mean, some of the designs, you know, I loved as a kid, you know, like, for the most part, they essentially hold up because I
well, like Count Marzo. Now, you, in a way, we can't really, in a way, you can't consider him a one shot because he appeared more than once. But he's kind of a character, just to give, I guess, for an example, that some people liked the character, thought the design was decent, but then here came MYP, and they gave him a revamp, and they gave him an overhaul, and it was a really good upgrade that some fans just love so much more than the original. Not saying there was nothing wrong with the original, because I like them both, but, you know, he was one of those characters that seemed like he did get an upgrade that people, you know, felt like they, you know, it was more modern, I guess. I don't know. I don't even know if that's the term.
Well, I'm right there. I agree with that because I did not like care for the character. I just felt like a guy who looks like a Shakespearean actor, you know, I just didn't find him a very, you know, and I know he has a fan following, and I'm not trying to knock the character. I'm just saying me personally, right, that look was very lackluster to me. And then MYP comes along and makes him this kind of like warlord with a Russian accent. I mean, it was awesome. I mean, with his amulet and you know, wielding a sword and stuff like that, it was a fantastic upgrade. So, yeah, he was in a few episodes, but, you know, I think also that you kind of make this a grouping of villains that are not Skeletor. They're not Horde related. They're not mm-hmm. Snake Man related. They're characters that, you know, were kind of given like with no connections to any of the, well, except maybe Batros. You know, mm-hmm. for example, since he's you know, teams up with Skeletor, but he is essentially a one-shot villain.
And for some, you know, and for obvious reasons, the poor guy has gotten confused as being a member of the Horde, which he is not.
Because he clearly looks like he was, like, sure. You know, supposed to be, symbol. You know.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, and it's weird, the ones that, you know, we talked about Count Marzo, but there's a character that usually nobody agrees with me, and that's fine because we all have our own taste, but there was one upgrade I didn't freak over.
And I know where you're going with this.
Yep, it was Evil Seed. Now, see, here's the thing. Again, you were talking about how, you know, good and bad had to team up to stop a character. Evil Seed was another one in Filmation where they had to team up to stop this being that was basically just destroying all of Eternia with all his plants and vines and just, you know, I mean, he could crush everything to the ground with those strong roots. So they had to kill him. But while he has this kind of like artichoke head and a lot of people said, you know, he looks silly, there was something so appealing to me about it. It's like he was distinguishable. I mean, he definitely had a different look. There was no reuse of nothing when that character was made back then. But I liked his unique, spooky, weird, kind of, you know, decrepit, whatever you could describe it as. I liked that look. And then when the MYP one came out, again, cool redesign, but I felt like for some reason I've seen that kind of look, even though, yes, he's a plant being an MYP. It's just the face and the flaming head and eyes. I was like, I just feel like I've seen this in a lot of anime or other cartoons, but into a different level. But I definitely could say I never seen that artichoke head, you know, Evil Seed of any level. So that, with the one-shot character, I like Filmation a lot more, but I know a lot of people disagree with me, and that's fine. They like MYP more.
I'm right down the center because I love both of them. I thought both of them, for what the MYP was trying to do, I thought that interpretation of Evil Seed was brilliant. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a good voice. I like the idea that he's kind of made out of, like, thorns and vines, like, you know, like old decaying, you know, plant life, whereas the Filmation one, you know, John Irwin did a fantastic job with this very kind of, like, he's deceptive. He clearly, you know, knows he's stronger than Skeletor. He knows he's stronger than He-Man. He knows he's a legitimate threat. And really, if they had not teamed up, yeah, they all would have been lost. It was just, they, you know, he's essentially staying at one spot and communicating to everybody, threatening them all. He's not, you know, he's not like the NYP Evil Seed where he's running all over the place once he's let go. But, you know, he's essentially like, I don't have to go anywhere. I'm going to stand right here and let my plants destroy the planet. I mean, that's that was where you can say his threat was probably a lot more menacing because he really didn't have to do anything except just control the plants in one location.
Yeah, where, and it was, and it made him spookier. I mean, for some reason, just the being caught off guard. I remember jumping as a kid. Remember when they were in Castle
Grayskull?
When the plants, when it came to that mirror, that when she was like, I was like, "What the?" And it's, I mean, that just caught you off guard, and it was freaky. And then He-Man, I thought, slashed the plant or whatever, and it,
that was an awesome bit of animation. And it also bursts out of the Talon Fighter too when they're trying to take off. It's like, what's the matter with this thing? And then boom,
yeah,
plants burst out. So it, and it does a good job of building up the character. Like, you don't know who it is right off. Like, he gives the little dwarf community like some seeds to help, you know, help with their gardens and vegetation, and it's, you know, we don't know who he was, but he said it would help our plant life, and then he came to the palace and offered seeds to them to help with their plant. It's just like he's setting everybody up, and you're like, who is this? I mean, obviously the episode is called Evil Seed.
Exactly.
But it's just a great build up, and he's sitting there with his cloak on and reveals himself, and I think he's an awesome look. I mean, that's, there's nothing wrong. I think he's a brilliant design, both of them. I think I'm right there. Like, I'm so glad we're getting a Filmation Evil Seed and the Filmation sub.
Yes.
Because I support both of them because he's such a good character, and he was done very well in both versions. You know, I understand why people don't like the Filmation version. I understand why you don't like the NYP version. But I just have such an affinity for the character that he was one of those characters that when I got older, I really appreciated how he was developed. And I'm like, mm-hmm. I'm not really thinking along the side. It's like, it's a team up episode. It's like, no. This is a really good one shot villain episode.
Right. And I think a lot of people could go back and watch that because he did, I think he might be a little bit, you know, underappreciated. I mean, obviously they're making a figure of him, so they know people love him, but I just think for some of the people that completely hate him, if they go back and watch an episode, they'll see it was a lot better than they possibly remember just by having a thought of, you know, his appearance and look. Just like you said with the MYP one, I mean, it's not that I hated the guy. It's just I preferred the Filmation one. I mean, just I felt like I just seen somewhat the design look of the MYP to some degree in something else. It's just I guess that's one of
– Well, know, everything – that whole – the whole series was definitely anime-inspired because everyone was into anything anime from Dragon Ball Z to you name it. I mean, that was just what was so popular at the time, and I hate that they were – so aggressive at forcing the anime aspect into the cartoon. I mean, they, other than the, you know, they made some, obviously we're getting off topic here. So I clearly understand what you're saying though, because it definitely, you know, I knew it right away. Cause my brother was really into anime at that time when that cartoon came out. And I thought, oh dear God, I'm so sick of the anime influence of this cartoon. I mean, I think even Dean Stefani even said that they deliberately did that because that was what was popular at the time.
Sure. Sure.
But
you'll capitalize on things. But yeah. Well, we mentioned, I think, a lot of bad guys, which we could still even talk about more because there's so
many. Oh, I mean, I got a slew of them. I mean, at least just to – I mean, I could just run down a list of villains, I mean, specifically from the He-Man cartoon. I mean, of just, you know, whether the episodes may not have been that good, but or most of them were, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like Morningstar from Battle of the Dragons. I don't think it's a particularly very good episode.
Right.
He's an awesome-looking villain.
Yeah.
You know, a big evil purple dragon that's trying to, you know, deceive Granimir and start war between humans and dragons. And
powerful. And the stuff he did, the amount of abilities he had. That's yeah. What made that guy memorable. And you're right. Nobody talks about that character because, It's like you said, it's a slightly different-looking dragon. But, heck, Granimir is too.
Well, they kept using the same stock animated dragons. They would just color their skin red or something like that. Mm-hmm. Whereas at least this time they went and designed a brand-new-looking dragon. They made him look, you know, definitely evil, like you knew right off. Mm. Yeah, this guy's up to no good. So he was, you know, it's an okay episode, but you know, it was he was such a great villain. Alan Oppenheimer did a great job of voicing him, kind of using the same kind of evil tone voice he does for a lot of villains, like he did with Negator, which is another great one shot. Well, he was in two episodes, but Game Plan definitely is his more memorable episode. And I think that's a fantastic one-shot villain. Essentially, I love the Game Plan episode with his little nerves that were like Jawa knockoffs that you know supply him with extra strength and energy, and just someone who wants to kind of like, see, I could link this to the Game Master who wants people to compete and fight for his amusement. And that's another character voiced by Alan Oppenheimer, who's hidden behind a mask, and he has this, trio of the humanoid, insect man, and bear man.
Isn't that
More of a
cool with the
cost.
head? It is. I always like it when there's characters, and then with all their, if you want to say, cronies, sidekicks, because it makes it feel like, in a way, like there's a new
There's
threat.
more factions out there.
Yeah, like more factions and threats and people that, like you said, don't have an allegiance to Skeletor or anybody else. They're their own people. It's like Captain Sticky Fingers and the space, all his space pirates, and the amount of different characters that were there too. I mean, and that was another unique character, and shooting that black tar, or obviously that's where he gets sticky fingers, but shooting that out of his hands. And I remember seeing them, and then I think he even had like a bunch of soldiers too that were with him, just background guys with, I don't know, some kind of shields with a skull or something. Wasn't there something like that he had as some other warriors with him beyond the main,
So what
character?
always comes to mind with me is like his essential crew of pirates, like the assorted, colorful band of characters that are alongside with him. That's what always comes to mind. It's
Yeah,
been
'cause
so
wasn't there
long
like a
since I've watched
frog
the other.
guy? I think there was like some frog guy, another guy with like a hook for a hand or something. But no, yeah, there was like when they have the different ones like that, I guess that's what makes it memorable. Besides, where sometimes it would just be sometimes a one-shot character that just didn't seem like he had much that he brought to the episode, or
Like
she.
Netsu.
Oh, hey, wasn't that was a good figure? But
The figure
no,
was good, but the
yeah.
episode is just like this, oh gosh.
Not much. That's weird. Not much for the episode. I guess sometimes a character can look so good that he can inspire stuff. I mean, sure, because like sometimes you'll want figures based off of anything you see in the cartoon. And really, the figure was a cool looking figure. I enjoyed it, but you're right. His appearance and what he did in the episode, maybe not that memorable. You don't hear many people talk about it. But I mean, I guess there's always a favorite of something that somehow it'll come up and come out, and there you go. Because like for some of the good guys. There's one that I always loved a whole lot, and I don't hear people talk about him much, but I like Cambro. And
Yeah,
that was
I knew you
from,
were going to say
yeah, you know what I was going to say, from
that.
Heart of a Giant. There was just something about that, like, I mean, it had a powerful message in that episode too, about judging people by what they look like. And just, I remember watching that when I was growing up, and for some reason, that episode just stuck so much into my head, and how they judged this guy thinking that he was, frightening, a scary giant, and you see he speaks, and he's actually a really smart, intelligent guy that helps, at the end, like, I think take down the laser bars that are holding him and Orko or something, or he could, yeah. It's just, there was something memorable about his look and him in general. And then, he gets confused with oh God, was it Henry? Was his name Henry or something in the other one, or what was his name where there was a guy that looked like it was Cambro, but it wasn't. He had like,
Oh yeah, I can't. It's from season two, I think, and I cannot remember anything more than that.
yeah, well, either way, he had like a different, his colors were palette swiped, just like always, like they like doing. And they made his eyes, I think, have pupils compared to Cambro, I think, were just
It's a solid
plain
white.
white. Yeah, solid white. And so he's still, Cambro is a one-shot character, if you will, and a good guy, even though there's somebody that looks similar. Because how they did that with a lot of beasts and creatures. You'd see them in one as a main thing, and then sometimes in the other episode, they're a background creature.
Yeah, or they would, like I was thinking of the rock creatures from a Quest for the Sword. Like you see that same creature in Evelyn's plot rise out of the fire, or out of the lava, excuse me, and then you'll see that same creature, I think, in Temple of the Sun, colored differently as a sand monster.
All right.
Has like kind of like this, kind of snake eye looking motif with like fangs and like a square back and arms and stuff like that. It
Did that
was
ever upset you? Like when you were a kid, when you'd see some that was so memorable as a character, and then sometimes they popped up as these background creatures. Did that ever annoy you or confuse you? Do you even
I
remember?
kind of understood like before I ever knew much about the behind the scenes stuff. I'm like, they may have just decided to recycle some of this stuff, because I feel like I've seen this creature before, and it really, for most of the episodes that I saw, I didn't see it a whole lot, but that particular creature was recycled a couple of times, and I just remember thinking Evelyn's plot, Quest of the Sword, he's talking. And then Evelyn's plot is just some mindless rock monster, but it's the same thing, same color, same look, everything. There's nothing different other than the fact that he doesn't talk, he just growls. But I mean, I kind of got it. Even as an adult now, I really understand and appreciate what they were trying to do. Sometimes it was easier just to, well, look, if you said that something's rising out of the lava, it's got to be rock. Well, just use that one we used in that other episode there, or something like
Right.
that. It's, I get it. To sit there and hold that as a flaw, it's like then I feel like you're missing the point. But that really didn't bother me. But
I got irked out just sometimes. Sometimes it
well,
annoyed me just.
sometimes, I mean, look at it now. There's some of them like, oh man, you guys really weren't trying here. Like I know. Like that you would use Selyse from Song of Selyse. She's in a city beneath the sea, and all they did was color her skin green, and that's it. I mean, like you guys really weren't trying here, man. I mean, you could have. I mean, anything would have been better than that.
Yeah, sometimes, yeah. Because I'll be honest, I don't know the name of the villain, and I know you would, but I thought there was an episode where there was that six-arm, two-headed guy that was in one episode, and then he was like a circus
Oh
freak in
yeah.
the back.
Oh, you're Zolt.
Okay.
Yeah, from Orko's Missing Magic.
Yeah, and didn't they throw him then? And I thought it was like, I don't know if that was the episode with, it was with Cambro, I think, because he was going to be one of the circus creatures that was captured too. Wasn't he in some laser bars too? Like they were showing a lot of cages, or am I mixing something up? I thought that there was that six-armed, two-headed guy in that episode, unless it was
Oh
another.
wait. Okay, no, Zolt
Which
didn't have
one?
two heads. The Tick and Tok, I think, was the two-headed, four-armed, kind of like character
Oh,
that had like a
forearmed.
Russian.
Okay.
Yeah, had a Russian outfit. But then you had
Yeah.
Zolt in Orko's Missing Magic, who had six arms,
Oh, and with the weird glasses or
yeah, he had
something.
glasses, and it was John
Yeah.
Irwin with his kind of like tattletale voice, you know.
Okay. Yeah. See how it's weird, but I got so confused. But yeah, there was actually a character like that, and you
Yeah,
said
and
I
he
just
that's
remembered.
another, and I completely forgotten about that one. Like I'm thinking along the lines of like Dragoon, Azrog, and Spydra,
Oh man,
Negatol.
don't. Oh Jesus, Spydra, Azrog. Oh my God, could you imagine figures of them? But again, very underrated characters that you don't see or hear about a lot. But when fans see them, they definitely remember those characters.
Oh, but well, and I will say Spydra got very close. I mean, she was frightening to me, not as much as Chakotay, but I thought her laugh was scary, her look was scary, and Azrog was just like, oh boy, this guy's kind of creepy too, because he's hanging out with her, you know. So it was that was an episode that I definitely rented a lot, but it didn't scare me enough to where I'm like, oh, I don't think I can rent this right now, like how Chakotay did. But I carry a large flag for the duo of Azrog and Spydra. That's just something that you don't hear anybody talk about. I've never seen anybody customize it. Hint, hint, wink, wink.
Okay, I'll do which one you think I should try first. I'll try Azrog. I think he might be more unique to make. Maybe I'll actually make a
Oh
character.
gosh, yeah, with that kind of cone head, kind of shaped head, which kind of makes you
Weird
feel like
in that long neck too. Didn't he have a real long,
he
skinny
has a
neck?
real long neck, he's hunched over, his feet are massive, his hands are massive. I remember I spoke to James Etalk like a couple years ago, and he told me that his original design was, I think, completely different, which I want to say, based on the shape of his head, it may have been, it looked like a pterodactyl almost, you know,
Oh,
because
no
it has
kidding.
that kind of, that's what I think it could have been. You know, I have no idea. I don't even know what it looks like, but it just kind of, based on the shape of his head, I could picture like a pterodactyl be kind of, you know, being part of that head, even though his feet are kind of like hooved and his hands are humanoid, but they're like long and gangly. But his look is just, you know, he's got a great voice by Alan Oppenheimer, which has been used before, but I
Pretty
always.
much it. He could do
He can,
everybody's
I mean,
voice.
he did so many of the villain voices. John Irwin did a few too, but, you know, Alan did, and then Lou Scheimer did some of them too. But he did such a great, like, raspy voice for Azrog, and Linda Gary did a real witchy voice for Spider. I mean, it was like a mix between Evelyn and Chakotay. And you get Spider's voice, you know, she just you know,
Just
with
hearing
the.
all these characters you're saying and we're talking about in general, that's what I mean. There's not a shortage of ideas to have figures be made if, you know, they would keep doing
Absolutely
stuff.
not, man. Like, we need
Exactly.
Dragoon, who's voiced by Alan Oppenheimer also.
Another awesome one to make. But it's like, you know, yes, I can understand. They said, you know, they're trying to create new things for the comics or this comic or mini comic because, hey, eventually going to run out of characters. And, yeah, to some extent, but trust me, there's plenty that could still be made, plenty of great ones. And as we just mentioned, there's a lot of them that just are underrated, not really mentioned or are forgotten about. And I guess with that, how about this? We'll take a commercial break and we come back. Let's talk about a couple of the most, maybe not most, but things that we think are overrated and underrated as for particular characters from certain factions.
I'm ready to jump in with both feet.
All right.
You're listening to a podcast from PopCultureNetwork.com.
Okay, we're back. Well, Tyler, I'm going to let you start this one off, but I figured we would both mention one overrated and one underrated character from the Masters of the Universe type of, you know, from the cartoon, mini comics, wherever you think, and also from the Princess of Power, cartoon, mini comics, whatever. But go ahead, you could start off with, if you want to start with Pop first, why don't you start with Pop and mention maybe an overrated or underrated?
Oh, definitely underrated is Dial-A-Mug. But it all goes back to the episode Duel at Devlin, where that's the first time you see him. You know, he's essentially, you know, that's his only time of, you know, doing his own thing. Hordak's mentioned one time in the episode, and that is it. He is running the show in this episode. He's running the town, essentially, you know, bullying everybody, demanding money from them, and just played as like a gang of bikers, so to speak. You know, him and the Horde troopers running around. But he
and
was
what a
he was
different design too, just to see him. That was unlike anything we've seen.
And I could not figure out what he was as a kid. I thought his face is in the middle of his body. Like, he's got, like, he's, it's like, what is he?
It's like he's just a big, it almost looks like a mess of junk, you know, with those different faces. And like you said, big, gigantic body. Looks like he has light bulbs or wires coming out of
yeah,
his head.
All that stuff. It was such a odd. And then you know, when he would smile, it was creepy looking.
Mm-hmm.
And his voice, George DeCinzo, excuse me. It's hard to say that fast.
It's all right.
Like, this kind of, like, muffle or like kind of like a old radio voice. Like he never had the same voice again. And what few appearances he had after that, he was played as a legitimate buffoon.
That was sad.
Yeah, it was sad. He's practically slipping on banana peels after this, but he at least has got one dominant appearance. And I think when people think of the character, they think of Duel at Devlin. And just, you know, he's got such a great voice with all the gears. I mean, just a big box with a face in the middle of it, you know, fires beams out of his head, and just a very imposing big character. Like when he grabs that villager from outside the bar and just carries him into the bar, like his profile of him walking is just like this is a character you just don't think you would want to mess with directly.
And
that's what you want to see from the Horde, is characters that are imposing and living up to the idea that we're running the show.
There you go. That's it. Because especially for a show that's supposed to be focusing on that, of the Horde ruling, and you're under their thumb, and there's these beings that are coming here to do what they have to, and you better listen to what they're going to say. That's what I wish I would have seen more of, and I wish there would have been more of Dial-A-Mug. And you're right, and then when we finally get more of him later, like you said, it became slapstick silly, and man, he didn't deserve that. None of the characters really did.
No, and that's really just kind of based on, like, we can't really – we have to brighten this up for the kids, essentially. You got these great – I thought all the designs for all the Horde were fine, like Grizzlord, Leech, Mantana. There was nothing I felt that was, like, kiddie about it. But the fact that they're, you know, they're just played as idiots, like how most of the Evil Warriors were in Season 2 of He-Man. It was just
exactly
like,
same thing.
It's unfortunate. They have a few moments where everybody – where they can shine and do something serious. Like, all right, finally, Mantana did something, you know, like accomplished like a legitimate act of, you know, deceit. I'm like, this is fantastic.
I'm going to have to go right into that now that you said it. Great, would you just said it there, but my character that I believe is underrated is Mantana. Now, here's the thing. People would say, well, why is that? You know, he's been in a lot of things, but think about it. Think how they played the poor guy out in almost every episode. You know,
he's a schmuck.
Yeah, he's a schmuck. He's getting knocked down this little, you know, trap door by Hordak. But when you look at what he did, I mean, first his the eye beams, stun beams, disruptor ray, whatever. I mean, my God, his eyes had so many different types of abilities, and he accomplished a lot. Sure, there was a couple of the episodes where his eyes got crisscrossed, just like any character. They're going to, you know, like you said, dumb down certain characters to lose. But I felt like he actually accomplished quite a bit of stopping some of the rebels or whatever he had to do. He got things done, but he gets the most, I think, disrespect in a way by fans. And obviously, well, on the cartoon they did, but some fans think that he didn't do anything.
Well, yeah, but when he's always played as – I remember reading this article like on an old She-Ra website years ago, and the person who did this website was kind of ranking the villains, and they were being serious about it. I don't know who the author was about it, but they were saying that, you know, Mantana was like the lowest – pole, essentially, because of how he's portrayed. It's just like,
he
was treated like so poorly. Like, he's constantly being dumped down trap doors. He's the guy that's always being slapped around by Hordak, like, consistently. I mean, just always disrespected all the time. Yet you'll see him in like the Laughing Dragon, like him and Leech are running like this demolition crew through a Mysticore, you know, like he's put in charge of big things. And then Talent for Trouble captures Orko and then Madame Raz right there on the spot with like these kind of like beams that turn him into ice cubes.
See, that's it right there. That's why I feel bad, because he seems like he accomplished the most but gets, you know, ragged on the most. But then I'm going to have to go to my overrated character real quick. I know you got one coming too, but I'm going to go to my overrated one. And it's not from what you would really think. I'll explain it because I know some people might freak out. I think Catra is one of the most overrated ones. And here's why. No, here's why. I mean, it's just, like I said, I'm being honest. She would, yes, tell people to do things at times. You're doing this. Like, she's leading off commanding. You've never really seen her do any physical fighting as Catra, the humanoid, if you will. But here's the thing. Her ability is to turn into this panther. A panther that is supposed to be, you would assume, really bad. Like, oh, shoot, she changed. They're going to be some trouble now. This ability she has is almost one of the most worthless ones. Every time she turned into the cat, she jumps, she falls down a well, she goes into water, she goes into a horde trooper helmet, she gets tossed aside. It's like, what did she knock Seahawk down once or something and maybe be on him for a second? What did she accomplish in that panther form? And that's what I mean. They made it seem like she's so awesome. No, she did nothing. Mantana is the one that did a lot. Catra seemed like she did nothing, and it annoyed me. Like I said, I wish she would have did something, but I feel like she was overrated, especially to be the one in command and then doing almost nothing. And you can't say, yes, I guess leading a battalion or telling people to do stuff, you're the leader, but she sure isn't a physical threat, I didn't think.
No, and I'm in complete agreement about that. Like, I like the character. I love her design. I like the idea that she's jealous of Adora because she wanted to be Force Captain, and now that she is, you know, you have that kind of bitterness towards, you know, Adora, and obviously towards She-Ra for obvious reasons. So she has a great backstory, but, you know, I think of, like, Secret of the Sword, when He-Man and Battle Cat show up, like, Battle Cat just, like, knocks the crap out of her and knocks her mask off, like, first thing.
Just like
and
that, yeah, just bang, right out the gate.
Right that. And then when I just like going to some of my favorite moments in like, She-Ra, but, like, in Talent for Trouble, after He-Man and She-Ra take out Leech and Grizzlor, Catra comes in, and then She-Ra just cuts a chandelier that just traps Catra immediately. Like, she doesn't even get to attack or anything. She's just stopped right there.
It annoyed
spot.
Me. And see, that's what annoyed me. I wanted Catra to do some stuff. When she transformed, you know, you thought, oh, shoot. You know, it was when you were a kid. When you seen that, you're like, okay, now something's going to happen.
Oh, yeah. It was very imposing as a kid when I watched
it. Yeah.
That.
But then nothing happened. And that just, dang, how annoying. You wanted something to happen when she turned into that form. I mean, why make such a gigantic big deal about this awesome transformation if she does almost absolutely nothing in it?
Yeah, I think it would have been beneficial to see her as doing, you know, like how Shadow Weaver was very deceitful. She could trick people. She could, you know, cast spells. Leech, Grizzlor, and Mantana are physical threats. Scorpio would use her tail, you know, and things like that. Whereas Catra, you know, you just
not much.
Yeah, I and it's this. Believe me, She-Ra fans, this is not trying to sit there and pick apart and tear this character down. It's like,
oh no, it's not. I mean, well, how can it be? Just
I mean, we're just trying to, let you know, because I'm praising all the other Horde members because at least they have, you know, they can present some sort of, you know, physical attribute to what they're doing. You know,
I praise the crap out of Mantenna. I mean,
yeah.
Praising Dalamud.
I think Scorpio. I used to think her tail was like a sausage link. Like I had no idea that she was supposed to be a scorpion. Like I thought, like is that like a link of like sausages? I really did. I just thought this is kind of odd looking. But
now Shadow Weaver. Now that she's somebody that got something done. Now that is somebody that felt like at least she was doing her job.
You know, from spells to changing her form.
Mm-hmm. And just think about it. She didn't even. She didn't get the full power of that crystal. Could you imagine if she got the full power of that crystal, how unstoppable Shadow Weaver could have been? Remember, she just got a taste of that that turned her, you know, from her human form, which they didn't call her Light Spinner in the cartoon. That was from a UK comic. I think that's when we first heard the name Light Spinner. I think, unless I could be wrong, did they refer to her as Light Spinner in the cartoon?
I'm not going to claim that they did or not.
I just didn't remember if they did, and I know that we only seen her wearing that like kind of veil and long robe or whatever, but either way, she could have been super unstoppable. But
and she's very loyal. Like she's not doing an evil land where she's like, you know, I mean, yeah, she does in like of Shadows and Skulls where she teams up with Skeletor, but you know, for the most part, she's pretty faithful to Hordak and the Horde. Like she's not about, you know, doing things for herself. She's pretty, yeah, you know, she likes to give Hordak as much support as possible, which is pretty cool, you know, to see a woman. I mean, obviously Catra is too, but like Shadow Weaver is the evil end of that group, essentially.
Oh,
but
yeah.
she's not always, you know, she's not busting Hordak's balls and things like that, like evil end does so much. You know, she's like just constantly digging away at him. But
well, that was Pop. We did our over and under on Pop. Now let's go to Masters of the Universe. Which character do you think is underrated from the world of Masters of the Universe?
Gosh, there's legions of underrated characters, in my opinion.
Pick one that's real memorable to you.
Oh, man.
There's a lot.
I mean, I feel like the ones that come to mind are like, you know, I mean, Jitsu. You know, I mean, there's – and I really can't say like Strong Arm or Fang Man or Icer because they were not part of the vintage toy lines. They were with Strong Arm. I think Strong Arm was supposed to have more appearances technically, but it turns out it didn't work out that way. But Jitsu overall, you know, from, you know, a couple appearances in the mini comics, a couple of appearances in the Golden Books, and one unnamed checked episode in the Dragon Invasion. And that's it. I mean, everybody that came out in that same wave that Jitsu did in 1984, Fisto got multiple appearances. Cobra Khan did, Webstor did, Whiplash did. I'm trying to think who else I'm forgetting here. Cobra Khan, Webstor, Whiplash, Fisto, Jitsu.
Was Clawful around there too?
Clawful. I can't believe I forgot that. Clawful. All the entire wave of 1984, except for Battle Armor, Skeletor, and He-Man, and Strider. Strider got one prominent appearance, and he was even name checked for crying out loud. Like they made a point of saying, "This is Strider." You know, poor Jitsu just really got the short end of the stick of the, and that's just
and that's continued. It continued into, you know, like I said, no MYP appearance or nothing. I mean, that the poor guy for being just such an iconic, you know, action figure that, you know, kids love playing. Who didn't love playing?
Yeah, I mean, Spikor, who was portrayed probably the worst of all the evil warriors, had more appearances than Jitsu.
I am Spikor. Oh, good God. Oh, that.
Yeah, I mean, I love the character of Spikor, but you'd be hard pressed for anybody who's a diehard Spikor fan to really be happy about, you know, because my favorite evil warrior is Too Bad, and I'll tell you right now, he was portrayed as just so poorly, both heads in the Filmation cartoon.
Yeah,
but, you know, I cannot defend it, nor am I going to try to, because it was an awful interpretation. Thank God for Larry DiTillo writing a good backstory for the character and Monster Within, and the essential concept of the character. But Jitsu in general was always a favorite character of mine as a kid. I really, as we've talked before, I hold him in high regard, and unfortunately he just was not, and it may have just been because, which I think it's so silly and stupid considering the 80s was the age of ninjas, you had Asian villains and so much stuff. Mm-hmm. But in that, I almost felt like, well, if you're that worried about it, why did you create the character to begin with?
That, like I said again, that just like we talked last time, baffles me. But well, my I guess if I would say an underrated character, and this goes through many, I guess, interpretations, is Mechanek.
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, the poor guy, like I said, he is always just shortchanged to where he's worthless. He's useless.
Except disappearing dragons. Disappearing dragons. He has given probably his best. I think even MYP. I mean, he's got a great voice by Lou Scheimer. He's got the robotic face, and he's played as a very confident and smart. And he's got his kind of buddy banter with Buzz Off.
Oh yeah, always a Buzz Off. But that's what people should remember, because it's unfortunate they always say this guy is worthless. He can't fight. All he does is has a stretching neck. It's like, no, he's the guy that does the recon, which is one of the most important jobs in any kind of battle. But he, like I told you the one time, they said, why don't you just kill off Mechanek and turn him into Extendar? And every time I heard a lot of people say that, I was like, are these people serious? You really consider Mechanek?
That's people who don't seem to get the group of characters, because if you're gonna do that, that means you got to kill Buzz Off or Stratos.
Yeah, because that continued, that disrespect continued to where they had to make it specific in an episode, I think, in MYP, of trying to him talking about maybe how worthless he is. And then when they were starting some of the newer comics, they were doing that again of talking about how Mechanek and his lack of abilities or being needed. And I'm like, that one just kills me, because again, it's a character that's way underrated and sure, fun action figure to play with, but I wish he would have got more respect. So again, if something was to return, it'd be nice if he came back and do him right this time. So that's my underrated. Now I'll go to my overrated and pass it to your overrated. Now,
I'm ready to step up to the bar and defend this one that you got in mind.
And I want you to, like I said, and I'll say why, for me, he's overrated. It's Geldor. Now, here's the thing. Really awesome.
German fans are going to attack you now.
They're going to kill me. And hey, like I said, this is just my opinion. This is why he's overrated to me. I love his look. Don't get me wrong. I remember that cover of him, coming at He-Man with that axe and looking intense and a very cool design. But then you read that comic, and this character does nothing. He does absolutely nothing. He drops his glass of water. He gets consumed by a tree at the end. He did nothing. He didn't even wield that axe that he was carrying on that cover. But the thing is, in our minds, if we don't read this stuff again, sure, you're remembering that cover and you're thinking, that guy was awesome and he was fighting He-Man. And I was like, did you read that comic? Go back and look at it. And usually when they look back and read it, they're like, oh, okay, he didn't do nothing. But still, cool design, but overrated, meaning by how intense and awesome they believed he was, because he did nothing in that comic. An intense cover, an intense look and design, but I felt he's overrated because people believe he was so awesome and fighting, but he did nothing in that comic, if I'm not mistaken.
I mean, he's essentially the mastermind between the abduction of the princess and everything like that, and demanding the secret liquid of life and kind of setting up the obstacles for everybody. But for an actual physical threat, like, you really don't see him, fight hand to hand with He-Man or anybody else in it. But, he's a character like so many of the He-Man and She-Ra cast, like, they're just not given a whole lot to do. And it's,
did it upset you? I mean, really, honestly, when
I didn't read the mini comics as a child, because I didn't know how to read, obviously, until elementary school. So it was just the pictures, and the pictures, just to me, I'm like, he's the bad guy. That's all I see. He's a bad guy. He's the bad guy. That's all I really needed. So yeah, as when I got older and went back and looked at him, like, I think I heard more about the hoopla about, like your point of view on that he doesn't do anything in there, and that obviously the secret liquid of life drops and then grows this giant tree and it kind of carries him up in the sky. No, it doesn't eat him. I think some people think the idea that, well, the tree, I think it devoured, like, no, it didn't. It just picked him up and carried him all the way up.
That tree was hungry.
I mean, unless it's something that people want to come up with this theory of like this like Venus flytrap in like the center of that tree that just like ate him up, or like the branches like tore him apart. I don't know if you want to come up with something like that, but to me, it's like what would happen with anything else? Something comes out of the ground and it carries you up with it. And because the tree was so big, he probably got tangled up in it, you know. And
he was dead. They killed him. They should have had him at the top of that tree after it grew, and you could have seen that mohawk.
Or we could just say he's afraid of heights and couldn't climb down.
But, yeah, so I guess that was it. Just really, when I was a kid reading that, because, I mean, I was just a little bit older, but when I was reading it, I was expecting this epic fight, and it disappointed me. It was still a cool mini comic in general, but just the impact that, you know, I was expecting, because especially to look at what I seen on the cover and nothing happened, it disappointed me, but it's good. I see your point too, which is awesome.
I mean, because his design to me is what sells him. I mean, like, sure. There's so many He-Man characters, like, you know, if we were all to go by Leech's portrayal in the Leech mini comic, I don't think we'd be a big fan of Leech.
Oh, please.
But his concept and drawing and the figure itself is an incredible design.
Agreed.
And that goes with because most of these He-Man, like poor Zodak, never got one mini comic appearance. Well, I think I'm trying to hold back here from like the first four I'll call them mini comics. I don't think. Did he show up in King of Castle Grayskull? Wasn't He-Man the Power Sword? It wasn't the Vengeance of Skeletor. And it wasn't in Battle in the Clouds.
Well, I mean, I think when we're thinking of the Alcala stuff and the early things, and you think of Zodak, we're obviously thinking of the record book.
I guess, yeah, the record book is what I'm thinking of. I'm pretty sure he's not. No. He is not in the first four mini comics, but.
No.
You know, and not really given much to do in general. He shows up in the Sword of Skeletor Golden Book. And is given one page of putting He-Man in, you know, and zapping He-Man inside Castle Grayskull. And as a kid, I'm like, is this guy a good guy or a bad guy? I can't tell what side he's working for.
A lot of flip-flopping, even when you'd come to get some of them coloring books. But yeah.
And you see him like on the card back, the re-release card back. He's blasting in He-Man with his pistol. So
that continued. You know what's weird is, like you said, artists would get that stuff, and that continued even to further stuff. Like after the Sorceress was introduced in Filmation, and we've seen her. Like when we had the giant puzzle that was painted by R.L. Allen, that one that had, you know, there was like Tila's on the attack track. There's Eva Lynn running from the attack track. Merman's.
Is that the one that Faker's in it too?
And Faker's being swiped at by magic by Orko. But you see, if I'm not mistaken, I think that Zodak was being shot at, I think, from a laser cannon by Manny Faces. I think, if I'm thinking of the right thing.
Got that puzzle, but I'd say everything else you remember except the Zodak part. That's the one
part
I
thought Zodak, yeah, because again, I was like, hey, we have all this stuff, because everybody could say, oh, well, that was, you remember, that was all reference stuff before Filmation, but I think it was a mix of reference material, because it's obviously Sorceress that was there was the Filmation Sorceress.
Yeah.
Probably had that and reference stuff from older, but, well, I got off topic. So now, I guess, your overrated character, who do you think is overrated from the world of Master of the Universe?
Oh, man. Because I have so much affection for the entire roster of characters. Like when people say they don't like Snout Spout, I'm like, dude, I love Snout Spout. Mm-hmm. I like Stinkor. There's really, you know, if I had to say one, which I've already mentioned several times on the show, and it's only because, and I'm hoping I'm not going to come up with something once we're done with this and think I really should have went with that one.
That's all right. Just go ahead. Go with what
but
you're.
But it's essentially Tila. Because, you know, the mini comics writer is good. The DC comics writer is good. People tend to look at MYP in the Filmation, you know, like, hey, when you think Tila, you think of the cartoon interpretations of the character.
Okay.
I mean, because in general audiences are going to think, oh, yeah, I remember that, you know, kind of thing. And I feel like I'm beating a dead horse because I've repeated this idea so many, or this theory. I'm just trying to make sure there's nobody else, because I feel like it's like saying nothing original here. I want this to be, you know, we're using this is to really talk about characters that get neglected so much.
Hey, if you
Tila gets all the attention in the world, mm-hmm. and don't get me wrong, she is a character that she is a must in the He-Man mythology. Like,
so
I would never
certain aspects and portrayals of her, and like you said,
I think if they were to ever and this is because I'm such a fan of the idea of a hero series. And if they were, and I feel like there's a way of utilizing her personality from MYP Information as just being this really crabby girl that was acts like a spoiled child that always wants to one up Adam all the time. Claims she's captain of the guard, but she doesn't act like an adult about anything. She's constantly wanting to run the show, but feels like if she's told she can't join the group, she's like, I'll show you. Like, she doesn't learn the idea of, like, look, you're captain of the guard. We need you here. This is not about, you know, that you're a girl and you can't come with us because this is man's work, you know, kind of thing. But I feel like if they were to kind of use that and say that when she takes on the role of the sorceress and has to introduce this responsibility to a young Dare and would say, you know, as a young woman, I was very hard on your father. I had no idea the responsibility that he was dealing with all these years of you know, protecting Grayskull, being Prince Adam, taking on Skeletor, the Horde, the same, all this stuff. And meanwhile, I'm busting his balls because he'd rather go fishing in the afternoon than work on his battle skills with me in the courtyard. Right. And I feel like that could really make her, turn her into the sorceress in the Filmation cartoon that's very affectionate, caring, but very serious. Okay. And she, I mean, it really says, like, you know, I understand the responsibility that we're going to be putting on our son here. And mm-hmm. I do not want to reiterate what I did to your father. All those, it's, you know, it could make for like a story of a really broken, battered marriage because they know they had to split up essentially because Adam's got to run the kingdom. Tila's got to run Castle Grayskull. They cannot be together, but they decide to have a son. And she, you know, I could see her saying, I want to make up for the mistakes I made with your father. You know, you could almost see it like as if like Adam probably doesn't go to visit her that much because he's running the kingdom. You know, he probably doesn't, you know, he loves Tila, but it's just like kind of a bittersweet relationship. He probably doesn't go to see her because she was such a very ball busting woman, but she changes because of what she sees that he had to endure all this time and does not want to see her son go through this. I mean, I got a whole like thorough idea of like the birth of human and bringing Adam and Tila in a kind of separate marriage that no one else could really know about, and that her
could be like a whole, that could be a whole podcast in itself.
Yeah, I just think this, because when people have mentioned the idea that, oh well Adam and Tila will get married and run the camp, like, are you people forgetting the biggest thing about the character of Tila that people love and always remember is the idea that her mother is the sorceress and she tells her, you will take over this duty at one point.
Right.
Like, you people are always, I mean, I don't know how often, but I remember hearing a lot about it, reading a lot about it. People are completely forgetting the idea that you're, and that makes for such great, rich character development. I don't care what kind of story they're trying to tell, but if you have a good character story arc, you can make Tila as like a very redeemable character, personality-wise. Oh, because sure. There may be a lot of people who absolutely love her personality, that she's constantly jumping down Adam's throat, cutting him down in MYP and Filmation.
See, and but, I think that's it. Sometimes we might get more used to the cartoons comparing to some, like you said, some of the original comics or different ways she's portrayed. I mean, I liked her kind of like powerful character and personality from some of the earlier stuff compared to Filmation, even though I love the Filmation Tila. But sometimes, like you said, she might just harp on Adam way too much.
Well, she's a one-trick pony in the cartoon. Yeah. Like she, yeah. You know, and this is, there's a lot of good, strong female character. This is not us. Taking down women a notch with Catra and me taking down Tila here. Because, you know, Tila was done very well in the He-Man movie, regardless of what people say about that movie. So that's not what we're talking about.
Well, here. I mean, there's no way were we taking down women. Remember, this is taking down guys and girls. We've been mentioning
I just feel like, you know, like with you saying
nobody will get upset.
Who's like a top She-Ra character, I'm saying Tila, who's a top He-Man character. But I definitely want to emphasize that there is no He-Man without Tila. It's like Miami Vice. You can't have Crockett without Tubbs. You have to have these characters because they are essential. But Tila has been written good in many other canons. The Golden Books, for example, she's written as a very kind-hearted woman who's ready to fight when need be. It's but you know, people always look to the flagship forms of entertainment, which has always been the cartoons.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's where the audience, I mean, there was a wider audience, so people will connect more to the cartoon usually most of the time. So that is their teal. Like when you'll show the blonde teal, they're always like, what is a blonde teal? What is that?
That's a hot teal. That's what that is.
Well, like I said, I think, like you said, what you said, that was respectable. That was cool. But yeah, we could probably keep going more and more about all these, but I think we'll end with that on that part of the subject. But let's do one thing. This is something different for us and for the fans. We're going to involve the fans here. It's a little trivia. First, I'm going to give you two things. You give me two things, and then I'm going to give one for the fans out there.
All
and
right.
The fans, now this is after we do ours. I'm going to give one to the fans, and if the fans can, whoever's the first person that'll respond on our Fans of Power Facebook page, if they respond with the correct answer, I think they've seen I was making this like Skeletor money, Skelecash. It looks like, you know, money, but with Skeletor and different art, and it's just some fun money. So I'll send them these free Fun Money Masters bills that I made if they can get it right. But first, we'll trivia each other back and forth. Just two things. One is going to be something that's going to be an image from a mini comic, and one's going to be Earl Norm art from the Masters of the Universe magazines from 87. So first is the ones I'm going to give to you, then you give to me, and then I'll give a fan. You ready?
All right, let's do it.
For you, I spy on this mini comic cover blood.
Let me think here. Gosh.
You have 30 seconds left to reply.
All right. Oh boy, I think you're gonna stump me on this one here. I really do.
I would play the Jeopardy music, but we would have copyright issues and we can't do that. You are down to 15 seconds.
Oh, gosh. Oh. Do, 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 there it is.
Thank you, Dirt.
Do, 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 boom, boom.
All right, Tyler, we're sorry. The answer.
I decided to wager no money, and I'm going to say, Just so I can throw out a random answer here, I'm going to say King of Castle Grayskull.
Sorry, you have gave the wrong answer. The correct answer is Double-Edged Sword. If you look closely on the cover of Double-Edged Sword, and
that's the first mini comic that came to mind because of the panel of He-Man
holding the blood inside. Exactly, and everybody forgets, on the cover, dripping off of the tooth of that big plant creature, you see red blood dripping.
I'm going to open that up right now here.
He's like, that's some bull.
I'm gonna throw down here. All right, here it is. All right, let's see. Where's it at here? All right, here we are. Oh, that's orange. What are you talking about,
dude? He's like, that's orange, and he red as orange. It's right up
like plant saliva. Man, what a crock. Boy, Alex Trebek, man. I'm telling you that.
Plant saliva. You know, I had somebody tell me that in another thing where we're, you know, talking about blood in the mini comic. In the one mini comic, you know, where He-Man is ripping the jaw open of that that's trying to bite him, there was red blood dripping, and somebody said, that's saliva. I was like, there's what? Red saliva? I just thought it was blood.
No, but I took it as blood too, yeah.
Yep. Well, this one I take as blood because, as you know, in Double-Edged Sword, at the end, in that last panel, he slices through those beans, and either it was a mistake in coloring, his sword was dripping red with blood, so this could have just been a mistake error of making it, but it is red.
Well, we just see it as Joe's making up the mythology as he goes along for absolute convenience here.
Exactly, but it is red. You gotta give it to me. You might have a color-faded cover.
It's blood orange, man.
Well, there you go, blood orange. You said blood, so there you go. All right, now you got to get me because I'm sure you're going to stump me. Go ahead with the mini comic cover.
All right, I spy the axe of Diamond Red Disappearance that Skeletor uses.
Is that Hordak and the Ruthless, Hordak and the Ruthless Leader of the Horde? How did they phrase that? Is it the one where it's called Hordak and? Oh, hold on, Hordak the Ruthless Leader of the Horde. Is it Hordak Ruthless Leader? I can't say it. Hold on, I can't remember.
Hordak, oh yeah, all right, Dirt, start counting down here because I'm going to get
the ruthless leader of. Damn it! What was the Hordak the ruthless leader
Time was running out, Jojo. And I didn't turn to the book until I got it wrong. So don't even think about it.
I can't. I know it's Hordak, the Ruthless
Leader. Hordak, the Ruthless Leader's Revenge.
Damn it, Revenge. Oh, did I just say that? And I said the Ruthless Leader of the Horde. All right. Well, you knew what I was saying. I don't want it.
I don't want to hear you and your blood orange. That's really blood nonsense here.
Okay. All right. So we both are.
Trivia has got to be exact here. So if you're telling me that is blood in a plant's mouth, but you got to get that title exactly right.
All right. So I'm wrong. All right. Now, one more. This one is going to be Earl Norum Art from the Masters of the Universe magazines. I spy in this poster rocks falling off of the jaw. Of a green jaw. Yeah. I spy in this Earl Norum piece rocks falling off of a green jaw.
Of a green jaw?
Yes.
Rocks falling off of a green jaw. Good grief, man. Rocks falling off of a green jaw. So I'm going to go through. The first poster has got brick being blown off, but that's not it, because that's not Castle Grayskull. You got the Spiral poster, you got the Horde poster, you got the Accessories poster, you've got the Pre-Eternia poster, you've got the movie poster, you got the African poster, the Meteor poster.
Come on, you gotta pick one. You got only a couple seconds left. Hit the final music, Dirt. That's it.
Due to recent copyright restrictions, we are no longer allowed to do music, but your time has expired.
I don't know.
It's from the Meteor poster. If you look closely at Crocobite, rocks are falling off of his green jaw.
Oh, jeez. You made it sound like Castle Grayskull.
Hey, I didn't say Grayskull. I didn't say Trap Jaw. I just said a green jaw. So there you go. Rocks falling off of a green jaw.
You putz.
I am a putz. Now you go ahead, one for me, and then we're going to give one to the fans.
All right. Since you're getting like super, super teeny tiny detail here, it's like I imagine you probably photoshopped those pieces onto his mouth on your Facebook right now and claim that that is what's really going on here. All right, here.
It is.
All right. Let's see here. I gotta go for the throat here.
Oh, God. What are you going to say? The color of a harness?
No, I ain't going to get all ridiculous on you here.
That was a ridiculous. It was rocks off of a jaw.
I don't want to hear it. let's see. All right. Explosions in the sky. Multiple explosions.
The one where Skeletor is on Landshark and He-Man's on Laserbolt and there's explosions in the background?
No.
Oh. The one where Stone.
Let me just double check here, because I'm trying to. Okay, yeah, I'm verifying here. Okay, yeah, I still know what I'm talking about here.
He's like, I know what I'm talking about. Okay, explosions in the back. There was the one where there was Stone Darn Rock on, but I don't think there was explosions in the background. I'm gonna have my 20 seconds here in a second too.
Due to recent copyright restrictions, we can no longer play game show music, but your time has expired.
Damn, I thought it was the Stone Darn Rock I'm on. What was it?
The Roboto poster.
Oh, crap. Okay. All right, well, you got me. We stumped. All right, so for our new game, we both are 0-2. All right, we both lost.
Oh, hey, at least it shows that, you know, it wasn't like we're throwing out like a bunch of, you know, I think it's pretty good that we both got stumped there.
It is good. It is good. All right. Well, we tried. We'll carry that record over to another day. Now, this is for the fans. Now, this one isn't going to be as nuts and bizarre as I was doing the others where it was real hard.
Why not?
This one can be solved easily. This one, I spy on this piece of Earl Norum art from the Masters of the Universe, one of the Masters of the Universe magazines. I see two different versions of He-Man on the same poster. And that's it. If you, the first fan that can give the correct answer to that, I'll...
Wait, are you sure about this?
I will send them some Skellacash. So that is your trivia question out there to the fans. The first that can answer that, I will send them Skellacash. Again, two different versions of He-Man on this Earl Norum poster. So that's that. And I want to give one shout out to a fan real quick before we say our goodbyes and things. I'm going to try to say your name, buddy, and I hope I get it right. Benelli Canales. He has a project on Facebook that he's calling Masters of the Universe, the Benelli's Mythos. He's writing kind of like a different little version for Masters of the Universe, but it's a fan project. But it's fun, it's cool, and I told him I'd read this one entry that he did today. It's pretty cool. So I'm going to read this real quick for you guys, and you guys got to check out his page. Again, on Facebook, it's the Benelli's Mythos. And here it is. The night fell upon the evil demon and his henchmen as they appeared before the ancient ruins of the mystical castle Grayskull. As they approached the Jawbridge, they noticed the giant gap between them and the massive fortress. Below them was an abyss, a chasm that no one has ever climbed out of from once they fell in it. It was said that in the first days and times when sentient beings first evolved from lesser creatures, the castle was built by warrior wizards who wished to hide their great magical secrets from the devils of other worlds and any other malevolent beings who would wish to rule Eternia by evil means. The secrets were said to still be there, guarded by booby traps and ancient creatures no longer seen in the outside world, monsters of myth and legend. These secrets were said to be the way to acquiring the ultimate secret, the power of the universe. As the skull-faced wretch looked out at the greatness of the castle, a mist the color of moonlight appeared above the ruins and formed into a skull itself. It spoke to the demon and said, "Only your demise awaits you here, Dark One. Your soul consisted of unfathomable horror that will only be met with its obliteration. Enter at your own risk." Behind a large stone, an Eternocyte, that's what he's calling the Eternians, I like a new name. He says, an Eternocyte onlooker witnessed the pale blue sorcerer wrap itself in his woman-carrying minion in dark blue smoke and then reappear before the Jawbridge. The demon pulled a sword from his scabbard, and as he pointed the sword closer to the keyhole next to the Jawbridge door, it glowed with an intense green light. He inserted the sword in the keyhole, and the Jawbridge opened obediently. The onlooker made haste and drove his attack track away as the evil ones walked into the great fortress, the jawbridge closing behind them. The beast man walked towards a stone slab carved in the artistry of the ancient race. He laid the demigoddess on it and made room for his master to conduct his ritual. "I defy you, spirit of Grayskull," he began to say, his deep and shrill voice uttering words that caused laser ropes to tie the demigoddess to the table. "This half of the mystic power sword is my right to the secrets of your womb. As I cut," he started to say as he took the blade to the woman's chest, "through this mystical being's heart," the sword cut her chest plate wide open like butter, exposing her beating heart, "and join my blood with hers." The foul villain slit his wrist and was about to let his blood pour into the demigoddess's heart. "I make her my wife, joining our powers and adopting the rights to the secrets of Grayskull, the secrets that will lead me to the other half of the power sword." As he hovered his slit wrist above the woman's open heart, he continued to speak. "And when both halves of the sword are mine, I will reopen the portal that allowed me into this world. A billion of my siblings shall run amok and feed upon the life of this dimension." And that's what he left off with. So I appreciate it. Like I said, this is Benelli Canales, his Facebook page, the Benelli's Mythos, or Masters of the Universe, the Benelli's Mythos. It's a cool page. Check it out. He's doing some good stuff. So there you go, buddy. I told you I'd do that shout out to you. And so, Tyler?
I was like listening to like a Peter Pan record book from the 80s.
Yeah, I was trying to do it. I was trying to get a little voice. Heck, it wasn't the best, but I was trying to give some character to what was being said there. I figured, hey, it's just saying what you'd be reading. So, Tyler, if you want, give a shout-out to somebody, and then I'll do my shout-out. And then Dirt will give some shout-outs of where fans can go and what they can do if they want to respond to us, too.
Let's see. I'm going to do my usual episode plug here, and I'm going to go with Colossal Awakes from Season 1. Also featured on the Greatest Adventures of All VHS tape for people who are fans of that particular tape. I know I am. But Another kind of tying into the one-shot villain idea, because that's what this episode is essentially builds up to, is this giant, you know, very unique-looking design of a statue that's brought to life by the Energizer for that Skeletor is using, and to attack Castle Grayskull, like a cyclop, like kind of just stone statue. Just looks cool.
He is cool.
Would look fantastic as a you know, like maybe made the same size as like Megator and Titus. Obviously, he's supposed to be bigger.
Yeah, but that would be a cool giant to have. Yeah,
it would be an awesome giant to have. I mean, just such a, and it's a fun race against time episode, and it's just Skeletor and Beast Man, and I always enjoyed the fight on the Collector when He-Man leaps off the sky sled, or I think it's a sky sled, onto the Collector, tears it open, and then, you know, takes out Beast Man and Panther, and then Skeletor attempts to push him out the Collector and says, "You can't survive a fall from this height, He-Man." And just the look of like, I want to kill you so bad, and then He-Man just like is holding on for dear life and just kicks him off. Just a fantastic episode. I love it. I love it. I love it. That is my episode plug for this week.
So that's your plug. All right. Okay. Well, my plug, like always, go to the all-encompassing Masters of the Universe Facebook page. Go to Masters and Mythos on Facebook. You can go to the Vintage Obscure Masters of the Universe Trading Group. And you can go to Motu Nation. Those are some great Facebook pages to check out. And now I'll pass it to Dirt, and Dirt can give plugs to a couple places to check to. Oh, of course, check Fans of Power on Facebook as well. And then Dirt can give you a phone number and other stuff.
Actually, first, I just want to point out it's the Fans of Power podcast for all He-Man and She-Ra fans. That's
there
the
you go.
Official title of the Facebook group. So if you want that Skelecash, make
there
sure
you
guys go there. Don't forget, you can go to popculturenetwork.com for this episode and all the past episodes. It's also fansofpower.com, which is part of the Pop Culture Network, if you just want Fans of Power. But hey, go to popculturenetwork.com and see all the other cool stuff that we got up there, too. Also, if you've got any feedback, any questions or comments you want to leave, you can call our 24-hour voicemail line. It's area code 217-953-4025. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, it is ready to take your message. So feel free to give us a call and say whatever you want to on there, unless you're looking to buy old books. It's not a store. It's feedback. So anyway,
yeah,
just want to throw that out there.
Right.
Also, if you want to subscribe, you can find us on iTunes under Pop Culture Network, or you can go to Podbean, which is the actual host that we run through, and they actually have an Android and iPhone app. So if you want to just load that app onto your phone, and then you can get the episodes directly to you that way.
Awesome. Thank you very much for that, Dirk. So with that being said, it was another great episode, and I just will sign off with saying have a powerful day.
And I'm going to say, I got nothing witty here at the moment. Not that I ever come up with anything really witty to begin with here, but...
hey, that's a good sign of it, I got to say.
I'm trying to see if I can't pull some sort of, like...
Time's up.
man. I suddenly hate Jeopardy a lot right now.
Like, I don't like that show no more.
I mean, gosh. I got nothing. I'm trying to come up with something... or I can take one of the morals from one of the He-Man episodes, you know. Okay. Remember to get plenty of sleep and not eat anything before going to bed, except maybe a glass of milk or some fruit or a good snack. So I'm just trying to, you know, pull out one of Orko's morals or something like that. Or it's like, treat your animals with kindness. You know, you'll find that's a lot more fun for you and for the animal. Until later.
There you go. Until later. All right.
The moral for disappearing dragons. There you go. There's my song.
Make sure you get your cats and dogs spayed and neutered.
There you go.
Yeah. Man, wouldn't that be awesome? We have Bob Barker on here every week just to remind us of that. And you ought to insert the audio of him saying that at the end of each episode after we've done our roundup.
Legal.
Bob Barker reminding you to help control the pet population. Have your pets spayed or neutered. Goodbye.